You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about, of course, the Indiana Pacers up to 3 days a week again on this lovely show. As always, I am one of your hosts, Tony Easton, on the other line with me, my lovely co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, are you excited to get in the zone for real basketball games?
I am. Did you see the most brutal comment today at the Los Angeles Kings media day?
At the Los Angeles Clippers media day.
Clippers. And, wow, I did. Wow, hockey there. Clippers, did you see the most brutal comment?
I did. Not. It's not. He said it already this summer. Why is everybody freaking out about it again? They already said this.
Because it's even more brutal to see it, hear it again. And see
blah,
it.
Blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's
they don't play for the Pacers anymore. For those of you who didn't see it, Paul George said, oh, this should have happened in Indiana, blah, blah, blah. And so that's how I feel about that.
Okay, well, as somebody who's been a Pacers fan for a long time, that was brutal.
There's a picture of the media day that year of PG, Danny, George Hill, David West, and Roy Hibbert. That should have been it, and that's how I feel about that.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah.
They may have said it before. They can say it again, and they'll say it in the future, and every time it'll hurt just as much as it did this time.
Okay. I'm sorry that you're hurt, Adam.
I mean,
speaking of media day, the Clippers is today. The Pacers was Friday. They got going early so they could start practicing early, and so they could because they're going earlier to India to play games before most teams. I think the Rockets play like Monday or today now that you're listening, or something really early. Anyway, yeah, media day. Nice and early, so we got to talk about everything. McMillan was up first, and the majority of his questions were about the Turner-Sabonis pairing. And lo and behold, Adam, the team is concerned, not concerned, is that they're not worried about the offense. They're worried about who can guard fours on the perimeter because they're faster. Where have you heard that one before?
Yeah, that sounds like it should be the Pacers' biggest concern.
So not on the Pacers live Facebook feed, but Sabonis in his interview scrum talked about how all summer his training process, not all summer, but his training process in the summer was about quicker foot speed on defense and guarding fours out a little farther, which is encouraging and pretty much exactly what you'd want him to be doing in here. And when he talked about playing in FIBA, he said, you know, he got to play the four and put some of that stuff that he'd been working on into games, which is nice. And we saw that ourselves, like he did okay guarding some pick and roll. So if you want some encouraging sign from that, there's your start, but we'll have to see it in games.
Yeah. And this new, that's the number, I think that's the number one media day story. This new experiment of two centers playing at the four and five could either go spectacular and change the way teams have to guard the Pacers, the way teams are building rosters currently, or go spectacularly awful. And it could mean the basically downfall of what this iteration of the Pacers are and could mean Victor Oladipo's gone in a year and all that stuff.
I find it hard to believe it will go either of the extremes. Like, not that I don't think it could be really good or really bad. I just don't anticipate it being like league altering in either direction.
I guess the problem I come to is I think it could be successful if you had the right coaching staff and the right, I mean, visionary might be the right word. Somebody who could really like take both Sabonis's and Turner's and some other guys' skill sets and make them work in the kind of a almost like see the bigger picture and put it to a perfect puzzle. But I don't see that happening with the Pacers coaching staff. I mean, has anything over the last 3 years said offensive creativity? Or I mean, I guess you could say defensive creativity possibly, because they did definitely have had some really solid defenses the past 3 years, top five probably if we averaged out all three seasons. But offensively, there's nothing that screamed like, oh, they know what they're doing offensively. They know how to, you know, make everybody perfectly. A lot of the offense successes come from let's ISO Vic when that was happening, or let's ISO Bojan kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll have to see what they're able to do. The only evidence we have of any changing offense is the one video of practice that Sky Agnes tweeted that has a lot of stuff to talk about. And well, I guess we could just do it now. In the video, the only possession of offense we see, Brogdon drives on a pick and roll with Sabonis, dishes to Sabonis at the elbow, who throws it to Turner in the corner for a three. Like, that's the blueprint, right? That's what we want. I know that's not like creativity, but that is what I think. Like, if you think ideal fit for those two guys, it looks something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Sabonis. We've
done this a million times, right?
Yeah, but we haven't done it in a while, so we probably should do it again.
That's true.
I mean, we've been pushing it off for a little while, but Sabonis is best asset over Turner was his ability to pass.
I mean,
that was the key in the playoffs 2 years ago that sort of beat that those they were double teaming Vic at the top of the key. I mean, it's just Sabonis' ability to see the 4-on-3 and make a move either past the corner, get to the rim somehow was kind of the one step above he had Turner offensive. But Turner is more like just get him in a pick and pop or get him in the corner or find him kind of cutting at times.
And last year, like Collison could set up Turner and Vic, we know can create a little bit. But like now Sabonis is the best passer, like on the whole team.
Well,
he's the best passer.
And honestly, so
that's even more important.
If Turner is like, what, a 38% to 40% spot up shooter in the corner, you put Rodden on the other side. I mean, you could make this lineup work by almost running the offense through Sabonis. I mean, obviously Sabonis' turnover has to get way down. I mean, he made a lot of, dumb passes at times. I think over the past 2 years, I'm thinking a couple where he throws in double teams and or stuff like that and gets it knocked away or like kind of over anticipates it where he thinks the guy's going to cut one way and throws it the other way. But some of that is feel and whatnot. But if they can, that's the way this works, right? Offensively, is Sabonis has the ball in his hands much more than any four has had the ball in the hand in a long time. And really, the last 40 because they had the ball in hand a lot would be like a Kevin Durant or Draymond, that kind of level.
Right. They're not there. Right. Right. Absolutely. We have a lot of media day to get to. I don't want to not respond to what you're saying, but we just have to keep dredging on that video again. The other thing, Edmund Sumner is the two guard in the bench unit in that. We'll talk about that in the preseason stuff, but I think that's interesting over Justin Holiday. Not that that's like so shocking, because I don't think they're super far apart in talent. I just kind of assumed maybe this was my own not critically thinking hard enough, but I just always assumed Justin Holiday would have that spot. So very interesting to see that.
I think also, do we know how many, like, or they're not rotating possessions and whatnot?
Yeah, no, we only saw the one. You're absolutely right about that.
Because they could be competing for the last spot.
We will talk about this in our preseason section.
Right, because whoever wins that spot is going to be the backup, what we call 2-3, till Vic returns. So that's what they're competing for right now. So I wonder if there's just an open competition because you have two guys who have probably similar talent. Contracts, I guess, Holiday's making, what, $1 million more than him?
Yep.
Roughly, I mean, somewhere on that. So they're similar. The price, so it's not like you don't owe one over the other or anything like that. So, I mean, I'm not surprised to see something out there, but I guess you're right. And you would think it was Holiday just because you think of that. They signed him to be the kind of 10th, 11th guy.
So, like, you think of Kyle Quinn here, right? So, I do at least, where, like, he got the room exception last year, right? And he was actually the highest paid center on the team because Turner and Sabonis were on rookie year deals. I know that that's irrelevant because they were their pay scales they were on. But
yes, salary cap spike.
Yeah, he was the room exception guy, but he didn't get signed to actually play. He was like a locker room guy there for injury insurance. So the room exception all went to Holiday this year, and maybe in my head I just like thought of his what I assumed to be talent level, although when I watched him more I regret how much I talked him up prior. However, you know, I just the way they used the room exception before, I figured out he might play a little more. But now that I've thought about it more, it's like the difference between him and Sumner is so minimal that I think it makes sense to play the younger guy, actually. I just had never really thought of it before.
Well, I mean, really, they have three room guys. I mean, I know there's the actual room exception, but in terms of salary-wise, you have McConnell, him, and Sumner, who are all making around this like 3 to 5 range.
Yep.
So I get what you mean by you sign the room guy to be that whatever 9, 10, 11th guy based on whatever like that kind of last piece to bring your rotation or maybe just outside it. But I don't think there's any like – what's the right word? I mean, I think it's a competition because it's just like
– Oh, it is. It totally is.
Who's playing better now? I mean, it's – you're not like set like we signed this guy for fun and we need him to play. It's like, no, we signed him as a guy who we could have as 11th, 12th guy, maybe over this guy, maybe not, depending on what injuries we have based on how this guy's playing. I mean, it's just kind of a depth move, I guess, more than anything.
I agree. I didn't think of it like that before, to my own fault. So that's cool for Ed.
You yourself into that point, right?
I did. I know. So this was stupid of me. But like right after I signed Justin Holiday, I watched his highest scoring games to like see what he could do. He's like an okay defender. So I was like, oh, this guy's pretty good. And then I scouted him more for my article I wrote on him. And I had already written about like the rotation without Vic and how I thought Holiday Justin would play like 15 to 20 minutes. Then I watched him more in depth for my article last week about him in depth. And I was like, wow, Justin Holiday is not that good. So I have some regrets about my order of writing. Anywho.
Well, Holiday is a confusing player too, because one, his family is got a fantastic NBA player and then a guy who we think could have a good season. And he's played for a lot of teams and played a lot of games because he played for a lot of tanking teams. He played in Memphis.
Almost all tanking teams except for the championship team he was on.
That's right. But ironically. I mean, between the last 2 years playing Memphis and Chicago, he played on teams where he was going to get a lot of minutes to play a lot, whether he was good or not, because they weren't really care. So I think you kind of are – it's deceiving, right? You think, oh, this guy must be a rotation player if he's playing all these minutes for all these teams, but I don't know.
So here's my conclusion here. He shot a worse percentage than Tyreek last year. Done. That's my conclusion.
Yeah, that's
Justin Holiday.
Yeah, but that's also about who you play with, right? I mean, if you
I included that in my article. I said every team he's on's asked him to do more than he should on offense.
Yeah, you put him in the ideal situation, he might be shooting pretty well because he has the fifth guy on him and he's sitting in the corner.
The other thing about lineups is Nate at Media Day confirmed the starting five is exactly who he expected, unlike the bench five. Brogdon, Lamb, Warren, Sabonis, Turner. So nothing really crazy there. But when it comes from the coach's mouth, you talk about it. Vic went on the stand. A bunch of people asked him about his injury, and he said nothing, basically. A lot of anecdotes about coming back as Wolverine, his favorite comic, and he'd rather show us how good he'll be than tell us and all this stuff. And they're just dancing around. At the first practice, he was running and doing drills, apparently, or reportedly. I'm assuming that's true. I mean, let me rephrase that. That's definitely true, but no contact stuff yet. And usually after contact, it's still a few weeks before playing. So we'll see how long that takes to get there. But, he's in a jersey and stuff. Like, he's doing some stuff.
It's exciting to see.
Yes, it is.
So we've seen, probably a half dozen of the kind of workout videos, et cetera, maybe less than that, maybe more like three or four. Do you think we're purposely seeing only the good, not even good parts, just like very segmented parts of it because he's improving really fast and doesn't want to show anybody, or because he's not improving fast enough?
I don't think either, actually.
we're the podcast of, and we go in the middle on this one.
I know. I need a take, right?
A lukewarm take.
It's like the Pacers did the dance last year, right? They said oh, he's indefinitely out, and then he came back earlier than we thought, and that was actually bad. But they just aren't, like, with big injuries to their bigger players, they just are quieter about it. And the only info we kind of got is Miles saying he'll come back, quote, earlier than people think, and then when asked for more about that, he wouldn't really give anything. So who really even knows what that means?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I worry about with this whole load management and when it comes back is this team going to be good enough? Like, last year they were good enough to kind of stem his loss, basically. When he's out there, they were able to go, I don't know what the record was, but they're 7-4 in that letting him stretch the first time.
Yeah, I think they were like an even 27-27 with
him. Right. We don't have the same leaders on this team. You don't have the same like veteran, just like day in, day out, do your job kind of mentality. Maybe it will be that way once these new guys play, but I think that becomes a concern because you can, teams like the Raptors last year, for example, could load management Kawhi because they had basically 11-man deep roster, and they had veterans who knew if we just go out there, we can beat, the bottom 20 teams every single night. We can get to 50 wins at the end of the year, whatever, it's like 55. I don't know the Pacers are good enough to do that. You can talk about this load management and taking your time, but at some point, if you don't win enough games to make the playoffs, then what was the point of this season? So, I mean, that's where I get concerned. But for now, I think he seems on track to come back, hopefully by December, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that December's would be great, I think, given all the information that we have and know. I'm kind of tired of talking about the injury, to be honest. Not with you. Like, I understand that me and you have conversation about the Pacers, but just, like, in general, when talking about where the team is, it's just like, we know he's going to miss the start of the season. We know. Let's talk about the team themselves.
No, I agree. I also, it's hard to talk about the team when you don't.
I know. Don't know what the team's
like that, and you don't know. Like, if this was the same team as last year, Novak, be like, okay, here's what they expect. Bojan's going to do this, Thad's going to do this, blah, blah. But this year, I don't really know what to expect because I haven't watched a guy like Lamb or Warren or Brogdon. I mean, day to day, the way I watched the other guys.
Yeah. Trying to think of other stuff that I thought was noteworthy of guys. I talked to everybody except for McConnell, Warren, and Edmund Sumner on the day, and the two-way guy, like all the two-way and training camp guys. But I only have the audio. I haven't really listened back to a lot of them yet. I remember Goga just being funny all day. For those of you who haven't seen my tweets yet or anybody's video, someone threw him a ball for a picture and said, squeeze the ball. And he thought they said scream. So he just yelled as loud as he could. And
I think people would be interested. What give this your quick hit take of Goga so far? I mean,
so this is a dumb thing, but like just him being European, I didn't know how good his English would be. But like hearing him like be sarcastic and funny, you know, I just think his English is really good, and he loves being around his teammates, and he's a really fun guy. Like, he's going to be super likable regardless of how good he is.
How much taller is he than Miles Turner?
A little bit taller than Turner, yeah. I think he's the tallest guy on the team. Everybody's impressed. I just did Locked On NBA with Josh Lloyd. So, like, I have to say what I said to him. Everything at Media Day is ass-kissing, right? So, but everybody said, like, when they ask, oh, who stood out to you at these runs or whatever, like, Goga got a lot of the praise from those answers.
So, okay. Well, how big does he look? Like, I'm talking about, like, you know, when you have a guy's 19, is he like still need to develop like that to be able to kind of be an NBA player eventually, I guess?
Yeah, I think so.
Does he remind you of TJ Leaf in terms of how thin he is?
No. No, he does not look thin or bulky yet. Good. It's also weird because he started being a pro at like 16, right? So he hasn't even been on like the regiment of getting cut all the time. Like some of these dudes in high school who are weightlifting from when they're like 14 and 13.
No, that's true. I mean, he's definitely been in there's something about, like, when you turn into, like, your early 20s, that's when you can hit your peak athleticism and able to get,
right.
Even if he's been a pro for 3 or 4 years, he's not going to be big. I mean, remember, Luka came in kind of chubby last year.
Yes, he did. The league, yeah, he's so jacked. No, I've seen pictures of Luka. He is jacked.
Yeah. I assume Goga will get his ass kicked a little bit this year, and yes, that will get him
He should. It's like learning.
So.
Who else did I? Brogdon is a good talk to. I asked him about his fit with Vic. Of course, he's elated to be playing with him. He thinks they're going to kick butt together, of course. TJ Leaf has put more arc on his jumper, much to my happiness. And Caitlin, who was documenting like all of his arc's jumpers last year, which was super interesting. Trying to think of any other big time highlights. I didn't have any.
So
nothing else really super stood out to me. Oh, Turner and Sabonis are still jet lagged from China, and they're going to India in a week. That's not good, but it is what it is.
So what does that mean, arc on his jumper? I mean, I know, but why don't you explain what that means, I
guess? Yeah, he put a bunch of muscle on last year. Like, this is a bad comparison, but this is the only one I have. I remember Zach Norman was on my 8th grade basketball team, and he grew a bunch between 7th and 8th grade, and he just, like, couldn't shoot as well because he grew so much. So this is like the NBA equivalent, right? Last year, or his rookie year, TJ Leaf was this skinny dude, and his defense was so bad because he just get bullied. So he put on a bunch of muscle so he wouldn't get bullied on D, but it like altered his shot ever so slightly. You know, he couldn't shoot the same way he had his whole life. So this summer he spent time working on putting more arc on his jumper, and we saw his percentages substantially drop. So maybe that's something that can help him get back to the shooter he was in college and his rookie year.
So he's going to start the year as the backup four, right?
Absolutely. I believe that to be the case. A lot of guys said that like the role hadn't been discussed, which I think that the team just wanted to, you know, not really lock in anything but the starting five. But, you know, he was the backup four in the runs we saw in practice. And it just makes sense that he would be the backup four to start the season. So, yes, is my answer.
When is his option day too, by the way?
His option day, I just got to turn the lights on, sorry, is Halloween. So we still have over a month before that. And KP didn't speak at Media Day this year, so we have not found out the answer to that yet.
So there was no discussion about two Sabonis extension, right?
Correct. No one asked Sabonis about his extension. I thought about it, but I don't know. It's not that interesting to me. Like, I think it's going to happen. So,
you think it is?
I do. It took a while with Turner. He's been in Lithuania the whole summer. Like, it's hard to communicate with a guy who's in Europe.
You think he doesn't have an agent that you can call anytime?
His agent is also probably European, right? Am I crazy? A lot of those guys are.
Yeah, but you think you can't call an agent in the summer about an $80 million
contract? They have to read a contract and stuff like that, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm a sucker.
All the guys the same.
Oh, anyway. No, his agent is not. Okay. His agent is not a European agent.
So what he has to, right? The deadline for him is what, October 15th, because the first game.
The 21st. It's 2 days before your first. Oh, it's 2 days before the first game. So it's the 20th.
20th. Okay, that's right. I'm thinking last year the first game was like the 17th.
Yes, so last year was earlier for Turner. And I'm on vacation again for the deadline, so I might have to do a 5-minute podcast from Florida for extension.
You can call me for that one. That
I just feel like it's going to happen. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see a hurdle that would make it not happen unless Sabonis thinks he should get a lot more than maybe the team does.
I guess, I mean, it's betting on yourself, but it's hard when you're playing at a position to bet on yourself going into the offseason.
Right. Right. Yeah, nothing else between the information we got at Media Day and the practice video that we saw. Nothing else really has stood out to me. So, just your typical run-of-the-mill hype the team up Media Day, although, you know, got some Goga's awesome, super fun guy. Got to hear Turner talk about his fit with Sabonis. All the good stuff everybody wants to know before the season starts.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I guess the only other question I had was anything interesting that Brogdon said. I mean, that's kind of the new, I guess, number two on the roster.
Yeah, I asked him about playing point guard, you know, because we've seen him be a wing more in Milwaukee. But, you know, he played a little more lead guard at Virginia, and his rookie year he had more ball handling duties. So he's confident he can do it. And it's like, it's not that I don't think he can play point guard. It's just that, like, it's a big role change for him, especially with Oladipo out. And he acknowledged that. He said, yeah, it'll be a change for me, but, you know, I've done it before. I can do it. So I think he'll be fine.
And I assume he wanted that. I mean, right? I mean,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's part of the factor in his decision.
Right, because even though he got signed, I guess he was signed and traded, that he had to want to sign here, right? I mean, that was...
Yes. He still had a choice. I think that is lost in the trade process.
Yeah, I mean...
He signed, and like the way sign and trade contracts work, it has a clause that says something like, if not traded to the Pacers in 48 hours, contract is void or something like that.
Was that how... I thought it was like they have 48 hours to match the Pacers and they can waive that.
No, right? That's how restricted free agency works. This is a sign and trade. This is not subject to restricted free agency.
Was it a sign and trade?
Actually signed with the Bucks, I put in air quotes. And in the deal with the Bucks, it says this contract is null and void if not traded to the Indiana Pacers. That's how I have interpreted it to work from CBA stuff.
Okay. Okay. I couldn't remember if they actually like signed him on restricted free agency, and then they waived the rights to whatever, or to waive the matching. I couldn't remember the whole thing.
Yeah, it was, well, that was also a weird one with the trade and the ownership and all that.
Yeah,
Brogdon's a great dude, though, you know, all that stuff. So I look forward to talking to him more. I asked Justin Holiday about being the oldest guy on the team, and I thought that, for some reason, I thought he wasn't going to know that, and he was like, well, I was the second oldest last year behind Robin Lopez. I was like, oh, you've also researched this. Okay, great. Trying to think of any funny. Oh, Justin Hade also had a funny one. Someone asked him what he did this summer for travel, and he said, "Oh, my wife wanted to go to Paris and Morocco, so I went to Paris and Morocco."
I
thought that was pretty funny.
I think we're missing the most pressing point before we go to break.
Oh, what was that? Did I miss it? Did I miss it?
No, I mean, did Vic, or did anybody make fun of Vic for going on a TV show?
Oh no! Someone asked him about the show, and he said he had never heard of it.
Which is hilarious
because it's clearly him, and he had the mask on, and he said. He said, oh, look, my face, like something to the effect of like, my face is so beautiful. Why would I hide it behind a mask?
Yeah, I mean, you've heard his voice when he sang it. It was
clearly him. That actually wasn't the funniest quote. Did you hear Turner's Wyoming quote?
No.
He went to Wyoming on a vacation, and Mark Monty said, did anyone recognize you there? And he said, well, yeah, I was the only black guy there. That was funny. I was like, wow. Media day. Look at this. He was
Turner coming from the set, bro.
It was funny. Oh man, I'm trying to think of other stuff. Like everybody had some interesting stuff to say. I'm just trying to remember my highlights, but I think I got all mine. It was a really fun day to just see all the new players, see how happy everybody was to be back and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exciting. We're finally turning the corner from the NFL to NBA time. Exciting. Yes.
Are we doing, is this our last football 5 minutes today?
I don't know if we're going to do one today. We'll talk about that later. No.
Well, we're going to talk about the preseason. A basketball game this week, Adam. Can you believe that?
Two games this week, technically.
You're right. Two games this week. Yeah, so we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about kind of basketball games. So what we're not going to do is talk a ton about the Kings because it's kind of similar to the Pacers to me of like, we don't really know, you know? I don't think even like outside of Fox and Buddy, it's like, well, they don't really know who's playing what role and stuff like that. But they play the Kings twice, which will be fun. Expanding the game to India, which is cool. But I'm just happy basketball's back. And they get to play Corey Joseph. That I am looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing just probably, 5-10 minutes of the actual starters getting some time together.
They played a lot. I really wanted to look this up, but I didn't. That first preseason game they had, I think it was against the Rockets last year. Didn't everybody play, like, normal minutes? Talk while I look this up.
Let's look at it. Oh, I was going to look. Fine. You can do it. Great way to throw me out there.
The Edmund Sumner coming out game. Do you remember that game?
I don't remember the person last year. You know.
Okay. Here's the minutes from that game. You were more right than me, but you were also wrong.
Okay.
Bojan played 23. Turner played 21. Collison played 25. Vic played 25. Sabonis played 27.
Okay.
So they played. Sabonis actually played more than his minutes per game, but everybody played about 5 to 8 minutes less.
And isn't there some kind of semi-mandate from the league to maybe actually play your starters?
Yeah, that's certainly possible. I think because they play a little back-to-back in the preseason, which that sucks, the second game, I think you'll see no starters for either team.
Well, didn't McMillan say that Turner's bonus probably won't play second game, but everybody else will?
Yeah, that I might have missed that if that did get said, but that makes a ton of sense. I said this in the first section, I think. Anyway, they're both still jet lagged, and Turner's not apparently sleeping the greatest yet. So, yeah.
Which is concerning. That's the whole concern. I mean, we're 21 days from the regular season, right? Something like that.
Yeah. I asked guys if they thought, I have a story about this. I don't want to spoil it, but I asked guys if they thought it would affect them for the regular season. And I mean, teams in the past have slightly underperformed early in the year that have done overseas trips. So, I will not spoil the results of the story before it comes
isn't
out.
Isn't half the league going overseas this
no, season? Only six teams, four teams? Not half, no. Let's Come see. On, man.
I thought it was eight. I thought 8 to 10 were
I think it's six.
Oh, that's it.
But I don't want to – don't quote me on that. It is less than 10.
So it's Rockets, Clippers, Pacers, Kings. Might be it.
Close. Anyway, where are the Rockets and Clippers playing?
China, right?
They play tomorrow. Don't they play tomorrow?
Oh, they play Friday. You were way up.
I was off with that one. My fault. Oops.
I don't know, but that's
– Anyway – So we have to preview stuff for the Pacers here, so let's do that. Like you said, yes, we might see no turns bonus in the second game. We'll definitely see them less in the first game, as evidenced by last year and just general, this is a preseason game. But I'm still intrigued by the rotation because I think the first half we will see a normal rotation. So just seeing what five guys are the backups at each position, how they mix and match those guys, who the first sub is, right? Is Sabonis the first guy off, or do they bring one of those many wing guard kind of hybrid guys they have in first? That's the kind of thing that I think I will be watching for the most in the first games.
I think the thing I'm looking for most is now that they have three new guys starting because Lamb is slotting in for Oladipo, yep. Who is going to be the offensive leader, I guess, right? Because the Pacers, previous leaders, Vic, then next would be Bojan, and then what next would have been a Collison maybe or a Sabonis. So, I mean, there's – somebody's going to be kind of the lead offensive ball handler. I'm wondering.
You mean this is what I'm kind of thinking when you say this? Maybe this is what you mean. Maybe it's not. But okay, the play didn't work. Who do we want to get us a bucket? Is that what you mean?
Exactly what I mean.
Yes. Yes. That is also something that I am going to be looking out for. Because I have a hunch it's going to be Warren. But I would not be surprised to see it be anybody, honestly.
Is there a chance it becomes Brogdon? Is he getting...
No, there's a good chance it becomes Brogdon. I would give it 40-30-30 between... the 1 through 3 guys, you know.
And is there a chance that Brogdon, just because he hasn't been given the opportunity to do this, is actually really good at it? I don't know.
Yeah. No, he is okay at creating. Even Bucks guys are it doesn't make any sense given his technique and his speed doesn't look fast, but it works. You know, he gets my.
Yeah, but it's something we said about James Harden, right?
Yeah, that's true. We're not making that comparison. Everyone, no, listen, but just so you know.
No, I'm amazed, but that's the same idea, right? Oh, he's not super fast. He's got this weird throw his arm up shot, but it works. I mean,
yeah, it sure does. It sure does. I am looking forward to seeing that. I am also looking forward to see of the four. Well, we know about Sabonis and Turner, so don't count those two. But of the four young guys in the second unit, so Sumner, Holiday, Leaf, and Goga, if any of those guys pop, I think obviously everybody is looking forward to watching Goga for the first time in an NBA setting. So that will be awesome.
Yeah, you think Goga? I guess they're going to play every guy, right?
Absolutely, Goga's going to play. Yeah.
So, I'm trying to – I mean, what – if you're a fan of the NBA and you're in India and you don't get to watch a lot – you guys are going to see a lot of NBA games in person, what are you looking forward to most? Just
ooh.
You know what I mean? I feel like when we go to games, the thing I look for most is, especially when I'm, in the first level, is just, can you, feel the energy from the team? It's something you can't get on TV, right? You just can't get, that feel of the guys yelling at each other and just, that atmosphere, right?
I think they're just gonna De'Aaron Fox, especially for the Kings, I think it's just going to wow these guys with his speed and athleticism and stuff like that.
Right, or like the dunks. I mean, in person, the dunks are also so much more like, in fact, than they seem on TV.
You can sometimes like feel them a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Or like end of shot clock shots, or like, you know, those kind of buzzer beater end of quarter shots are much like, you also feel those a lot more when you're in the
TV. Yeah, yeah.
Or like when a guy hits a crazy shot, you can feel it more.
Yeah, I'm glad they're expanding the game over there. Everybody's excited about that prospect of the trip. I know that obviously going to across the globe, excuse me, 3 weeks before the season starts isn't great, but you know, obviously playing in front of fans, you don't get to see the NBA as much, especially like you were talking about. What is it there? It's a 9-hour difference. So the games for them are at 5 a.m. or something. So they can't even, there's no way they can watch them. So this is awesome for that.
Well, then the other thing is too, they're playing in a, no, this, right, the one they're playing, this stadium will not be, apparently it should be smaller than most of the.
Oh, I don't know anything about the stadium. I should probably look into that.
So it's apparently it's an 8,000 seater.
Oh, wow.
That might be from one of, I don't know if they play more when it's like larger field sports. So yeah, they might be able to add more seats, but like it's going to be a smaller stadium than one, the way the guys played in when they were playing in the Olympics, obviously. Those were like, or not the Olympics, the FIBA, which were like huge stadiums. Yep. The opposite way, and it'll feel more like a high school college environment, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So another actual basketball thing I'm watching for is, you know, if there's any stylistic changes on offense. I know that Lamb and Warren can create their own mid-range shots, but does this team now, with less passing and two big men, you know, they have some identity changes. Does that change the scheme that McMillan runs out? And I know we beat the drum that we don't know that we've seen his creativity yet, but this is the time if it's going to happen for it to happen. So I'll be looking to see if we see any sets that very clear we never saw that last year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see anything in preseason. You don't give away your hand.
That's true.
I remember right last year, they lose three of their four games. The only one they won was the one they played against McAbee.
They beat the Rockets last year.
Okay.
Maccabi was two summers ago.
I mean, that was 2 summers ago. They went 0-3 and then beat Maccabi.
Yes, you are correct. They had the Maccabi team that had Josh Smith. That was a fun game.
Good time.
That was a good time. Yeah, that is true. These games don't matter at all. And the last thing I'll be watching, that this is for you diehards, is the three guys who aren't going to make the team. You know, what are we going to? This is their only chance in a Pacers jersey this whole season. What are we going to see from C.J. Wilcox, Jakeen Gantin, Amita Brima? Excuse me, because we probably won't get to see or hear very much about them the rest of the season.
So how many? They have two roster spots left, right, or one?
They're filled up. All 20 guys.
No, I mean for the regular season.
They are filled up, all 17 guys.
So they're not even set to make the team, right?
No, they're just playing preseason to see what they can do before they go to the Mad Ants and get their bonus.
That's right, because Jakar took up the last spot, right?
Jakar did take the last spot, and I've heard it described for him as a prove-it deal. But I mean, because of that means he's going to make the roster.
So. Oh, so there's a chance that if he is just miserable the next 2 weeks, and Wilcox is amazing, that he could be replaced.
His contract's guaranteed enough that he'll make the team.
But not enough where like if you really want a guy, you can't get rid of him.
Sure, if he tears his ACL, he'll get cut. But no, he's gonna.
I just mean like $500,000, whenever that probably guarantees his chump change to this team.
Yeah, he'll make the team. I guess I'm looking forward to watching him too. I have a cool story about him coming out tomorrow. I know that no one really super cares, but
no, I will. Tony previewed it for me, and it seems like it's going to be cool. So
yeah, he's the last. So I'm writing about all seven new guys who aren't the two way guys this month, and he's the last one. And I'm glad I got to talk to him media day. He's an interesting guy. But yeah, I think just with so much change, I think there's a lot you can say that you're watching for this or that. And I think I'd be like, yeah, that's a good point. That will be interesting because this team could be totally different. It could be very similar with just new guys. There's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, what's crazy, this is the third iteration of a Pacers team, a new Pacers team under Nate McMillan.
Yeah, wow. Weird.
You don't usually get to go through three different teams to coach, but.
Three very different teams in his 3 years.
The thing is, though, all 3 years he's won, what, 45?
Well, I guess the first 2 years weren't that different, but it was just very new.
No, the first year was the PG, Jeff
Teague. It was new for the Pacers, but not new for McMillan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's me. He's gone through three different iterations of the team.
Yeah. Yes, I am looking forward to seeing how this all goes. Should be very interesting, but I don't, you know, like, I guess I'm interested to see, like, if Brogdon guards the point guard or if Jeremy Lamb does in a situation like this, but I imagine Brogdon, like, I don't think there's anything with the Kings specifically that I'm like, oh, how are they going to handle this or that? Because I think it's clear for that they're going to start Bagley and Deadmond, and you know they'll just have Turner on Deadmond and Sabonis on Bagley, and that's that. Unless they consider Bagley more center. Nate McMillan did say at Media Day, I didn't include this, but he said that Turner will be guarding the guy who's around the basket more, basically. So whichever one they consider the center is who Turner will guard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, none of that stuff is like, oh, we have to watch for this because we don't know what it is. We know what it's going to be. It's just which player. So.
And, honestly, if it goes really bad, we can talk ourselves into just preseason and we can move on. Not big deal. Like, you know what I mean? It was really good. But
next Monday's show is going to be positive no matter what happens. So that's exciting.
Oh, yeah. Preseason doesn't matter at all. They go 0-4 or whatever. They'll be fine. They'll be still
figuring. Can we do any okay, what players – so this is interesting because, like, the Stars might not play the second game. So what player scores the most points in the two games?
Oh, who's – oh, Sabonis.
Sabonis. I'm going Aaron Holiday.
To play the most minutes, you think?
Because Aaron's going to play a ton in both games.
I guess Sabonis isn't probably going to play
second game. Sabonis isn't playing at all the second game. That's why I'm shocked you picked him.
No, I'm thinking average. Like, who's going to score the most?
Oh, per game, Sabonis is definitely a good choice. If you're going per game, I think TJ Warren's a good choice, too.
Yeah, that's the other one I would have thought of, maybe.
Yeah. He might play the second game, though. I don't know. Total points, I'll pick Aaron. Per game, yeah. I'll pick Warren.
I was thinking the average. I just thought Sabonis could have, like, 30 points.
Well, That makes sense. How many games do they win? I'll just... Hedge. I'll say one. That's boring.
I think they'd probably split. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, the second game's going to be weird. It's going to be weird. I got nothing else on preseason, though. I mean, we're kind of far off, and you're going to talk more Kings later this week in the same episode as TJ Leaf, so I don't have anything else right now.
No, yeah, I think we hit all the good points of preseason. We should move on to our Malcolm Brogdon preview.
I'll let you handle the rest of the preseason stuff on Friday because we got 3 episodes this week. Very exciting. Yeah, but speaking of episodes this week, TJ Leaf preview on Friday, Jeremy Lamb preview of the season on Wednesday, and coming up for our third segment here, Malcolm Brogdon. So stick around for that. Adam, how excited are you to watch Brogdon on Friday?
On Friday or this season?
Well, in this season, sure. No, just Friday.
Just Friday, I'm going to give it a solid 3.
Just Friday, yeah.
This season,
I am looking forward to watching him.
This is about the third time we've done this, but is he the best free agent the Pacers have ever signed? I guess they didn't sign him. They traded for him, but theoretically they signed him, right?
You know what's I'm not going to answer your question. I'm just going to give you a fluff answer that I was thinking about the other day. So he was a former rookie of the year, and we're all psyched about the signing. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's literally the same thing that happened with Tyreek last summer.
Yeah,
well, except we're talking. Really psyched about Tyreek, former rookie of the year, and then he was terrible. So.
Except we're talking $68 million more in guaranteed money.
Yeah, we're talking 4 years of substantial money. So.
And we're talking about a guy who has a track record that's a little more consistent. Now,
understood.
It's not as good as Tyreek's peak, but it's.
One has proven they can be a winning player on a playoff team, and one has not. I just thought it was funny, anecdotally, too.
I mean, I think 2 summers ago, we might have done that with Vic or something like that. I don't know. I mean, you could make it every year. Who's their biggest trade and signing? I feel like we do that a lot. So
it's fun. So Brogdon, we can kind of start with last year. 15 eclipsed the 15 points per game mark. Passed a little less. You know, maintained his passing assist averages from the year before. But all of his percentages went up, even with all of his shooting percentages from literally everyone on the floor went up. 50-40-90 dude. While his usage went up, which increasing your efficiency by his true shooting went up 0.4%, which is a lot. I mean, that's 0.8 points per shot. With increased usage is unheard of. You know, most guys, for most players, the relationship between usage rate and efficiency is inverse. The more you're relied on to do, the less efficient you'll be. So seeing Brogdon do that is great. How much that stabilizes this season for him as his usage will definitely go up. That is the question when previewing his season.
Can I read you a list real quick?
A list? Yes, you can.
Larry Bird, Mark Price, Reggie Miller, Steve Nash, Durant, Nowitzki, Curry, and Brogdon. I guess you count Elena Deladon as the only people ever to put up 50-40-90.
50-40-90 club. Yeah, it is something. It is something. Because like we always talk about players getting close, but like I don't think you get close. You know what I'm saying? Like it's hard. You're not close, you know. You're like 0.4 free throw percentages away is so hard to make up for the guys who have enough volume to actually qualify for the list.
The only time someone's close is when Steph Curry misses it by like a 3 or a free throw.
Yes. Yeah, guys who actually like Darren Collison was not close. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
In theory, he was close, but like he wasn't. 2 years ago, he was close.
I was going to say PG, his last year in Indiana, was semi-close. 46, 39.
No, that's not close. That's 4%. That's not close.
I know, but I'm just saying that's what you mean. I know.
Like 4% more for him. Like, he's like an MVP candidate with how many shots he's taking.
That's what Paul George almost was for.
Touche. Touche. But that's what I'm looking at with Brogdon, right? So I don't expect 50, 40, 90. I don't think anybody should. Just like look at the list Adam just read. Like, it's such a rare feat in NBA history that I don't think it's a reasonable expectation. But especially with his increased usage, you know, I'm not sure how much more defensive attention he'll get at the start of the year, especially when Vic's back. But I think it's unreasonable to expect 50, 40, 90. Now, it's close to it, sure. But the closer he gets to maintaining it while his usage goes up, pretty much will dictate what kind of offensive player they have in him.
I will say it's a little easier to be 50, 40, 90 when one of your running mates is being double teamed or triple teamed most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. I was really impressed though that like his true shooting percentage did not fluctuate that much with Giannis on and off the floor, and the Bucks were only like slightly worse with Giannis off as long as Brogdon was on. I mean, obviously there's some fluff in that. That team was really good, but
that
made me think that he's not so reliant on being next to him.
I mean, remember this was that was a team that lost the eventual champions and was up 2-0 and should have been up 3-0. I mean,
they were an overtime away from 3-0 up on the team.
I mean, I think if we had a list of best teams to not win a championship, they would be on the top 10 of that list.
They were really good. I think people were really sleeping on how good that Bucks team was last year.
Yeah, I mean,
let's stop talking about efficiency and talk about some other stuff. I think a big one for me with him will be turnovers. He had a pretty low turnover rate last year, but now he's playing more point guard. If that goes up more, that hurts, obviously. But I think seeing how well he takes care of the ball as he gets a lot more of it and B is asked to do a lot more will be something to monitor, because he committed more turnovers last year than 2 years ago. And yeah, I think I'll just have to see what kind of decision maker he is, because he, you know, like you said, it was easier for him last year with the attention that Giannis got.
Yeah, I think that's a good spot to look at. I think that kind of leads to what I was thinking about too. It's just, he's going to have the ball in his hands more. He's going to be more usage than ever before. Like, you know, he was able to pick his spots from the three at times, stuff like that.
That is true. His usage might not go up. That is a good point.
Well, that's true. But he'll have to take more. I mean, I'm going to say bad shots, but shots where he kind of has to be the guy to, you know, to take the shot at the end of the shot clock, where like you just got to take the shot. Before, he kind of, it wasn't that guy, right? It was if all else failed, get the ball to Giannis and make him make a play. This time, it could be if all else fails, get the ball to Brogdon, and that can hurt your shooting percentage. But if somebody sees a good, like, I think that Vic falls this one, right? Where he would shoot like 43 and 37 that 1 year, but a lot of times he was taking those like contested end of shot clock shots and he had to take them. Was he not just not take a shot? I mean, it's better to try something than nothing. So we'll
see. Another one I'm looking forward to seeing with Brogdon is, and this is interesting, I've never actually looked super hard at this. Last year was the worst he's ever shot from 3 to 10 feet and from 16 feet to the three-point line. So some of his mid-range percentages really went down, and just what we know about the Pacers' offensive system, he'll be taking more of those shots. So can he get those percentages up to where they were for him earlier in his career? That would be something to monitor.
It's also worth noting that he took, like, barely any shots from 10 to 16.
Long twos, he took none. That Bucks team was not even going to let him do it.
And 3 to 10. I mean, he took
from 16 feet to the three-point line was 3.3% of his shots. So, yes, of course I'm overreacting.
So, let's see. What does that mean? So, if he took 6,400 shots in the whole year, something like that?
Or no, he did not take 6,400 shots.
640 shots.
640. Yes, that makes – it's 750 shots. But I was like
– whatever. So then
6,400 shots is like the whole team.
3% of that is like what, a grand total of 20 shots?
Yeah, it's not very many.
Yeah, it is
a small number.
It's an amount where if you shot 2 of 10 or 2 of 20, it wouldn't look that weird because you can make it up by shooting significantly better from inside the rim.
Right. Leaf brought that up. You know, we've talked about that with Leaf before, like with his good and bad percentages, is that his volume of threes is so low that it would fluctuate so much with three more on media day. He said that. And I was like, yes, TJ, talk your stuff.
Well, I mean, sometimes in the NBA, we do this a lot. There's a lot of stats, a lot of numbers, but sometimes there are useless stats. And
I think there are useless stats.
The 10 to 16 is one of those ones where it's just useless. I mean, for him, it's useless.
Right.
Obviously, other players, it could, like, it's fine, but for in this instance, it's just not a useful indication of the kind of player he is.
So the big thing about Brogdon and obviously he's better than Collison on offense, but the biggest separator between the two is that he is actually a good defender and he can defend a lot of positions. And for me, when looking ahead at his season, another thing I am curious about is what position he frequently guards, given the guys around him. And I know he's capable of guarding a lot of positions, but how often do they put him on the point guard or not? Because that's a lot more work for him if he's guarding a lead ball handler more often than not.
Yeah. How many lead ballers, though, are there in the East? I mean, just asking. If you think about it.
Don't make me do this. On the spot. It's just so hard to think of teams. So there's Kemba on the Celtics. There's Ben Simmons on the Mighty Sixers. And you could say that Josh Richardson's a ball handler. Tobias Harris, kind of a ball handler, too. The Mighty Bucks, of course, he's not going to guard Giannis. That will probably be Sabonis' job. Chris Middleton's kind of a ball handler. Does that count or no?
Well, I guess I was thinking point guard. Like, would he be guarding the point guard?
Eric Bledsoe? Yeah, he'd guard Bledsoe probably.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, like, well, you've got one.
I'm thinking of, like the Heat, right? Like, I'd put Lamb on Justice Winslow and then put Brogdon on Jimmy Butler. And I would be like, yes, this is I think this is way better than the alternative.
Yeah, I mean, I think what his job is going to be is taking the load off Vic defensively.
I agree. I think with Vic back, it's easier, though, because Brogdon doesn't have to do as much on offense, so using that energy on defense is great.
Yeah. I mean, I think Vic could be in for a really good defensive year because he'll be guarding he's a really good defender, and he's guarded the worst player, and you can make him look stupid.
In my Brogdon article, which this is my final point, which you both ruined and made easy to set up, was his fit with Vic is what's going to make him awesome, because we could talk about his stats and we expect to grow and not to grow, but, like, he's going to have two different seasons on paper, I feel like. And One of the things is that Vic's steals rate is going to go up through the roof playing with Brogdon, I think, because he can
guard. Yeah, because Brogdon's going to force that guy to pass the ball instead of just jump it every other time.
Yes. Two is that I think that their yin and yang will help each other, where Vic will be better, could exert more energy, not be better because he got hurt, but can exert more of his energy on offense because Brogdon can do so on defense. And that will be, and I think he can maintain some of his stats even when doing that when Vic is back, because he'll be able to play more off ball, where I think he's a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is. I mean, there's a reason the Pacers shelled out a first, second round pick and $20 million for this guy. I mean, he's the ideal fit. I mean, he's the point guard version of Thad Young.
Perfect. Yes.
That's what he is. I mean, Thad Young and Vic that first year were like perfect running mates defensively. They deflected the balls off to each other all the time. And they just had a great kind of cutting off passing lanes. Vic would guard the guy up front, and then you'd have Young step in to deflect all the passes. Well, this is basically the same version, but in a point guard body and a guy who could shoot a better three-point shot.
So I don't know why I decided to do this differently, Adam, but I have. So normally we predict a player's stats, but I'm actually going to give you his stat from last season, and you have to tell me if you think he'll be better or worse.
Okay.
Okay, 15.6 points per game for Brogdon this year, more or less?
A little less.
I also was going to say less. In my head, that number is about 13.5, 14. Where are you at with that, about the same?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was thinking probably 50 on the dot.
Okay. Oh, nice. A little higher than me.
I mean, I think it really just depends on all the other guys in the roster. Is somebody going to have some great jump offense? Like, Sabonis is going to make a leap, and then it's just going to be deferred to them at times. And then
that's true.
I think
this is the easiest one. Assists over under 3.2.
I think that will be way up.
I also think that will be way up. I'm going like 5, 5.5 on that.
Yeah. I may be closer to 6.
Yeah. Just how he's going to play, I think, will make that go up. Now, if they ask Sabonis to create a lot more, then maybe not. But I mean, there's no way it's less. There's almost no way it's less than 3.2, just given what he's going to be asked to do. His rebounding has gone up every year. I have no idea what to expect there because he's playing with two basically centers at the same time. 4.5 last year. What are you thinking? I'll go same on this one.
Yeah, probably a little less because you're right. He's playing with two centers. He's playing with a lot of guys who are actually taller than him and will be crashing the boards a little more than him.
Yeah, he's playing – I think he'll play – he's playing more minutes ever so slightly this year than he did last year, I would imagine. So I just think that one maintains. I don't think there's a reason it goes up or down.
Yeah.
Boring answer, but whatever.
Well, that's awesome. Again, it's a circumstance thing. Yeah.
And honestly, if he's more impactful, it doesn't really matter what his stats are. This is a fun exercise. Last one is steals last year. 0.7 career low per game. I think this one's easy as well.
Well, the Pacers love to jump lanes. And
they're a hustle team players, though. You know, they're a steals team.
Who, the Bucks?
No, the Pacers.
That's what I said. The Pacers love to anticipate.
They're a decent steals team, yeah.
Their defense is predicated on anticipating where the ball's going to go and training their guys to jump it, essentially. Yes. That was a PG for a while, too.
Indeed. I would be shocked to not see his steal rate go up. Last year, the Pacers were third in steals per game as a team. So, yes, I imagine it is a very safe bet that number will go up.
I would agree with you. I think he goes up. And then, just shooting percentage-wise,
Yeah, I guess for him, that's actually a compelling topic, unlike most guys.
Does he maintain the percentages? Does he slightly go somewhere else? Like, his free throws, I assume, should stay the same.
Yeah, he's at 90% for his career, basically, 89.5. So, yeah, I think he'll be money. Well,
Tom, you wouldn't make the 54-90 club with that free throw percentage.
I know. That one you can tell me is close. You know, he's money from the free throw line. I don't think that's going to change. I think where his hit will go, well, he'll take the biggest hit is on threes. One, because I think he'll take slightly fewer, just, again, Pacer system stuff. And two, because he won't have as many open looks, just not playing with Giannis. I don't think it'll be lower than 40, 39%, but I think 42.6 that he had last year, he'll be a little lower there.
Yeah, I think if you look at, like, his career, which is like a 48, 40, 89, or 90, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, that's great, actually.
That's what he'll probably average.
Yeah, let's do that.
I think his stat line might literally be 48, 40, 90, and then 13 points per game.
I can live with – if you gave me, instead of 50, 40, 90, 48, 40, 89, great. With how I anticipate his role looking like, great. That would be a great season.
Yeah. I think anything – that remotely comes close to 50, 40, 90 is great for any player on the roster. So, yes.
Well, right. Like two seasons ago when Darren Collison was awesome, right? Led the league in 3-point percentage by a mile, was actually an okay setup man. You know, he finished that season 49.5, 46.8, and 88.2. And he was actually a very impactful offensive player. Like, picture slightly better that with defense. Like, that's a damn good player.
So 50-40 mining means you're elite. So if you're close to that, it means you're still a very good NBA player.
Very good NBA player. Yeah, that the guy we just talked about retired. That blows my mind.
Yeah. So what do you – I mean, we did sort of the over-under. What do you think his actual stat line is? Just give me, like, points, rebounds, assists.
Points, rebounds, assists. Okay, let's go. 13.5, 4.5, 5.5.
Okay. I think – I would go
big 0.5 guy.
14.8.
Nice.
4.3 and 5.6.
Nice. I like your precision.
He's gonna be on the dot too. No decimals.
Yeah. No trailing zeros or anything hidden in there. I got nothing else today, Adam. What about you?
You know, I'm excited. We're back to three times a week. Who else we got for player previews this week? So
yeah, I think Jeremy Lamb talked about, and then you have TJ Leaf on Friday.
Yep, and
TJ is a very mysterious player this year. Big stuff for him coming up.
So. And then we'll bring you Justin Holiday at the beginning of next week when we talk about the Kings, both Kings.
Yeah, that one is. I'm glad we're doing that after games and after we learned he might not play as much. We got kind of lucky on that.
So I think we probably need to wrap our podcast because my dog has now brought up three different squeaker toys into where I am. So at some point, it's going to get annoying in the background.
Why? What?
My dog. So she keeps grabbing squeaker toys out of my bedroom and bringing them.
Oh, Cora, come on.
On the side of me and squeaking them. I took one away the first time. She gave me the worst look. Now I took another one away. She's just mad. So we should probably wrap up soon before we start hearing this loud.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Get excited for three episodes a week for the next 2 weeks before we ramp up to the normal schedule, 5 days a week at the end of the preseason as we get going. Because basketball's here. It starts this week. It's exciting. You can follow Adam on Twitter at FriedmanAdam5 and me at TEastNBA. You can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers. I believe Adam has told me this may not happen, but he will be tweeting more on that account during games this year.
So. Yes, I'm going to try to. Preseason, I can't guarantee because the games are like 8.
Yeah.
Are there 8 a.m.? Preseason might be out the window, but
understood.
Regular season, yes.
Which, good. We'll finally have more stuff up there than just mailbags and art and articles and podcasts, which is great. Do not forget, I forgot to mention this earlier, but to check out Manscaped, the number one place for below-the-belt grooming. 20% off at Manscaped. If you go to manscaped.com and use the code LOCKEDON, we had fun ad reads for them earlier. They have some awesome products for shaving every part of your body. So go check them out. We'll be back Wednesday to talk Jeremy Lamb. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you soon.